We're going to call the Jobs and Energy Conference Committee to order. We're going to have the little outline of where we're going today is we're going to have the Commissioner of Deed and Dolly come up and give about 15 minutes each. And I say about 15 minutes each. I won't take a sword to you if you go over 15 minutes, but I might start at 17 minutes. Talk a little bit about some of the issues that we've had discussions about, and then we will move to adopt some a few things, and there'll be time for questions with the commissioners too. Not too much time, but some time for talking with the commissioners, and then we'll see if there's some energy stuff, and then we'll be done. So if the commissioner from Department of Energy, I'm sorry, Department of Employment and Economic Development could come down. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Nice to have you here. I'm sure you love spending your day at the Capitol waiting for us to get to it. But you know, it is the nature of conference committees. It sometimes can be much more short notice than you care. So you proceed. We talked a little bit about what we were thinking of having you answer some questions about and give some thoughts and hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, pleased to be here and excited to answer any questions you might have about Deed's portion of the omnibus bill. I believe that some of the issues that we've been talking about are discussing some of the side-by-side language on administering grants and measuring performance, which we're happy to dive into and offer some perspective on, and anything else you'd like to discuss.
So, Mr. Commissioner, could you give us some your thoughts on the accountability pieces? There's a Senate language and there's the House language. There's actually a couple of pieces of language in the House, and I know the one in the Senate. I think it's, mm-hmm. I can't remember where exactly it is in the R7. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on page R7 in the economic development pamphlet or section.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think there's all kinds of things that we have to discuss where we may not agree coming into this room. But one thing I think we all agree on is we should have better performance measurements for the grants that Deed administers to the nonprofit community. And so we at Deed were quite happy to see the language that both the Senate and the House put into the bill regarding how to better track and measure performance for grantees at Deed. As someone myself who's coming in new to government from the private sector who took a look around at how we administer our grants and how we measure performance and the kinds of things that we track, one of my first thoughts was, boy, we could do better here. There's more we could do to evaluate the performance of our grants and give a thoughtful look at the kind of success metrics that would be needed to make sure the taxpayers' money is being spent really wisely. So I was quite heartened to see that both the Senate and the House have some thoughtful provisions in here around how to do that best. I think the language is largely very similar. There's a couple of differences that you can see on R, I think it's R8 and R9. The Senate in item 30.12 asks that we ensure that the organization that is receiving the funding is in good standing with the Secretary of State and the Department of Revenue. That's easy to do. We're happy to do that. It's a difference from the House language, but I think that that works. I do think that the language in 30.23 for the Senate is something that I think has the right spirit behind it. We'd prefer to push that out a year and take a year to figure out what the actual performance measurement metrics are first, such that we make sure that we're not being unnecessarily punitive on the reporting requirement here for, say, a small organization versus a larger organization on what might be needed. So I think the spirit behind that one is quite good, but we would like to take that first step that the Senate's asking us to take in terms of determining what the metrics should be and how they might differ by size and style of organization before determining what the kind of punishment would be for a miss in the reporting. But on the whole, we find that organizations are pretty good about reporting back to us the things that we ask for, because that's how the nonprofit sector is built. It's to report back to their funders on how they've done. And so we're overall optimistic, I think, about the spirit of these provisions.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Grove. Just a couple of questions, and let me kind of start at the beginning back at R7, where the House has an inventory of workforce development programs. The Senate has an inventory of economic development programs, I think with the intent being that the Senate was covering more. Any thoughts on that distinction?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, so if I'm reading this correctly, you're saying that the scope of organizations for which you're asking for reporting would include not just workforce development programs but also economic development programs? I think that broadened scope seems fine.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, so, you know, a lot of the discussion that led to the article, at least in the Senate, and I'm presuming in the House as well, was based on the report that came out from your the Pathways to Prosperity report that came out, where quite honestly I think we were lacking information regarding exactly who was being helped. And so a number of the items that were identified in the Senate were specifically designated towards Pathways as well as other similar programs meant to ensure equity. And I'm just trying to compare right here, because it looks like we asked for more in that area than the House does. Any thoughts on that, or what? Maybe update us on the direction of your department.
Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, specifically referring to the Pathways to Prosperity program having, I'm trying to figure out which line of R8 you're referring to where there's a difference. Could you be more specific, please, on which?
Specifically on 30.6, the demographic information included too, but not limited to race, age, gender, and income of the program participants. 30.8, a list of any subgrantees receiving funds from the program, as well as the amounts that they're receiving.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I think those are all reasonable asks, and I would say that as it relates to Pathways to Prosperity or direct appropriations or any other competitive grant programs, we need to take a look at this holistically and think about any grantee who receives money in this space from the department should work with us on providing that data, and we should be able to provide that to you in a timely manner, as you've outlined. So I don't know if I would differ our approach for the Pathways program versus an equity grant versus an appropriation. So,
Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Commissioner Grove, I would agree, which is why we wrote it the way we wrote it. But I would like to dig in a little bit more into your concerns around line 30.23. If we're providing funds to an organization, wouldn't we, and that organization doesn't comply with the reporting and the accountability that we've defined up above, why? Help me understand your concern with making them ineligible for the next biennium.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I think on this one, our thinking is we want to, if the first direction that we're receiving from the legislature is to do a better job of reporting out how our grantees are doing and establishing some performance metrics that we can reasonably say for any individual organization will show that they did the work that we asked them to do, I want to get a sense first of what those metrics look like and how they might differ by size and style of organization. And so at that point, we can figure out whether a punitive measure is needed to essentially ban them from future funding for a biennium if they didn't meet a requirement. But I think I would like to know what those requirements are first before figuring out, A, if a punitive measure is needed, and B, what that might be. One of my concerns would simply be that if an organization is quite small and they miss a reporting deadline and we aren't square on exactly what that performance measurement or reporting deadline is, then not having funding for a biennium could totally shutter an organization. So I want to just be thoughtful about it. I think where you're headed is actually quite smart. It's a good place to get to. We should demand good reporting, but I prefer we just take this step by step and at first look at the performance measurement and then figure out if a punitive measure would be needed to ensure compliance.
Mr. Chair, just one final comment, and thank you for that, Commissioner, and I certainly understand your caution. You know, I think this was the intent here was not necessarily on your department as much as it was to ensure that the grantees are being accountable, because when we had a conversation with your department, that seemed to be where the breakdown was, that the grantees weren't collecting the information that they needed and were required, and we wanted to make sure that there was some accountability back to it, so that they understood that this was important to the legislature and to the state. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Grove. I agree with you. I don't think we should start with punitive process. I think some of these organizations are really small. They're the front line of communities, and they're the ones that are putting out fires. I think what we should start with is a supportive system that if they're late with a report, is there a technical support that DEED can provide, instead of starting with a punitive and saying that if you don't, you know, send a support a report in, you're not qualified for the next biennial funding. I think we should start with a process that says, okay, so this organization missed the deadline. Is there a way we can support them to make sure that that report is in? Thank you.
Are there any other questions? I'll just add the comment that somebody told me it's always good to start with a story. I have a very small nonprofit in my district, works with 20 kids or less. It's run by two people that have a job secondary so they can actually live. I do want to be careful because they do good work with the 15 to 20 kids that they do work with. They're one of those that gets a grant from one of our bigger grantees. So, and I want to make sure that they don't get caught up in a crosshairs here as we try to get good accountability so that we can make better decisions up here. So we'll have to have some more conversations about this, but that is thank you. Thank you for your comments on that and your concerns. Seeing none, you did your 15 minutes. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Would the Department of Labor and Industry please step up? Good afternoon, Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Chairman.
Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
I think we were going to go over some of your housekeeping stuff today,
yes,
if at all possible.
Yes.
So why don't you, unless there's anything to start, why don't you proceed?
Okay. So for the record, I'm Nancy Lepink. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. So I believe that the provisions that we're calling housekeeping begin the side-by-side at line 155.31, subdivision 12. Is that consistent with your thinking?
Could you repeat that?
Sure. So as part in the side-by-side, at line 155.31, subdivision 12, it references issuance of licensing orders. That, I believe, is where the housekeeping provisions related to our construction code and licensing division begin.
Is there a staff that could give us the page R or whatever?
Oh, R13.
R13 members?
Chair members, I believe DLI housekeeping, actually the one begins on page R11 with section 16 of the House bill.
Now that might not be where the commissioner is going to start on all the because we did take some But anyhow.
Okay. Oh, sorry, you're correct. My mistake. So on section 16, 155.22, referencing, if you can say it. So, okay. So basically, I think I'd best to turn it over to Charlie Durenberger, who is head of the unit in the enforcement, in construction code and licensing unit, to walk you through these amendments. Sorry, Charlie.
Please proceed. Identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Charlie Durenberger. I'm an assistant director at the Construction Codes and Licensing Division. I manage our enforcement and licensing units. So basically what we're trying to do here is clean up a couple things. One, when we issue notices of violation, licensing orders, administrative orders, which are our primary enforcement tools to businesses and individuals, we give them an opportunity to contest that action by requesting a hearing before an administrative law judge. And current statute only allows for that to be in writing or be submitted to the commissioner by fax. We're simply adding email as an option to make it easier for people that are subject to our enforcement actions to communicate their request for a hearing to us. Do you want me to go through each of these or just answer questions? Do you have a preference?
Do people have questions on the addition of email to the means of notification? I don't see any. So why don't you proceed to your next
issue? Okay, the next one is, there's in subdivision 11, a changing of the wording on the definition of a public building, which simply reflects a grammatical correction that relates to this reference to charter schools.
So this is on R14, line 156.24.
Hold on a moment here.
At least in the version that we have.
Yes, that's correct. That would be the reason why I'm missing it. We're right ahead.
Okay.
All right, so that, like I said, is basically a grammatical correction. The next one, under section 21, on line 158.1 on page R15, relates to the marking of plumbing contractors' vehicles. We really don't have a statute that addresses the issue of plumbing contractors putting their license numbers on their vehicles. There's an old statute, 325F, that required marking of a master plumber's license on vehicles, but that predates the creation of a plumbing contractor license, which we did in 2012. So we're basically trying to take this provision of marking vehicles from 325F that relates to master plumber licenses and put it into Chapter 326B, which is CCLD's primary statute, and make it clear that it's the plumbing contractor's license number that needs to be on the vehicles, not the license number of the master plumber, the individual licensee.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I know we, and I guess looking at the side-by-side, I haven't gone back to statute, but I've noticed that electricians would have that on their vehicles, other contractors. Why are we calling out specifically plumbers in this case? Why wouldn't we? Are we being consistent across the board, and is there a way that maybe we could be more consistent across the board in statute?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pratt, this is the goal, is to be consistent. So what we did is we took the language that requires electrical contractors to have their license number marked on their vehicles, and we basically copied and pasted it into what we're proposing here for plumbers. So that's exactly what we're doing. We're saying the way the electricians have done it, now that's the way we want the plumbers to do it. Word for word.
Well, we're all for consistency, so thank you. I guess that's fine. I don't have any other questions on that.
All right. Are there any other questions? I have one. Is there a way we could put into law that the plumbers would tell the on their trucks what the difference between a plumber and a pipe fitter is, so I can't quit? People stop asking me plumbing questions.
Mr. Chairman, if there were, I'd be all for it.
Thank you. Did you have other issues in there?
Well, I believe that there may have been questions regarding Section 25, which we've got on page R18 at line 161.5 under we're proposing to amend Chapter 326B.84, which is a section that provides us with grounds for action against licensed residential building contractors. And what this section of statute does is it lays out a number of specific types of conduct that would provide a basis for disciplinary action against a licensed residential building contractor if we found that they engage in these things, like forging lien waivers, not paying subcontractors, failing to reasonably supervise subs and employees, that kind of thing. And we want to make it clear that we can take the we can penalize an unlicensed building contractor who engages in the same type of conduct in the same manner that we would penalize a licensed contractor. We just want to make it crystal clear that we have the legal authority to do that.
So in essence, this, Mr. Chair, what that would mean is that that if you're an individual who should be licensed as a residential contractor, so that's one potential violation, is that you failed to obtain the requisite license. But then if you're also engaging in activities that would be a violation of this provision, even though you haven't done what you were supposed to do, which is get a license, we could still take action against you in engaging in these particular behaviors, even though you haven't actually gotten a license. So now it could be interpreted that failure to get a license would and somehow exempt you from the application of these provisions also to the actions that you may have taken simply because you didn't comply with the law to get the license that was required. And so this is just making clear that whether you're licensed or not, if you're unlicensed but should be licensed, so that's one problem. But then if you're also engaging in these activities, that these are also then additional violations that could be brought against you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Are there any questions to this particular issue? I do have one. What's the cost of a contractor's license?
A residential building contractor license, I believe right now it's $320 for 2 years.
For 2 years?
Right, and that includes a big chunk of that is the contribution to the contractor recovery fund. So it's not all a license fee. At least I believe it's 160 of that goes into the contractor recovery fund.
It's almost 50.
I could be wrong about that specific number, but it's at least $100 of that 320 goes into the contractor recovery fund.
Could you send when you get back to the office and you look it up, would you send that forward it to our CAs here so we know how much goes into the contractor recovery fund?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. Yeah,
thank you. Are there any other questions for the Department of Labor and Industry? Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you so very much for coming up today. I guess we have a few motions to make. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Lempick. I would like to move to adopt the House language in Article 8, page R11, section 16 through 19, which would be page lines 153.22 to 156.27. As we just heard, this will allow the email to be used for notices in addition to existing methods.
Is there any questions or concerns? Any questions from the members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, I won't repeat it unless I have to, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have adopted that particular piece. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to adopt the House language on Article 8, which would be on page R14, section 20, which would be lines 15628 to 15734. That's the House language clarifying existing requirements for accessibility to public buildings.
Are there any questions to the motion? Any questions to the motion from members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify it by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Same sign. Opposed? Opposed, same sign. We have the second motion adopted. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to move to adopt House language in Article 8, page R15, sections 21 through 22, which are found on lines 158.1 to 158.19. This is the Department of Labor's requirement on the plumber's license display that we just discussed.
Is there any question on the motion? Any question on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. We have accepted the motion. Passed the motion. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to move to adopt the language in Article 8, page R18, section 25. Members, you'll find that on lines 161.5 to 163.3. This clarifies that sanctions under construction codes and licensing statutes can be applied to the unlicensed individuals. And this is, again, the House language.
Are there any questions to the motion? Any questions to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion as read, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. We've accepted that motion. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I would move to adopt House language in Article 8, page R22, section 30. Members, you'll find this on lines 166.3 and 166.4. This is the repealer for the old rules on the plumber's displaying of the license number, and so it all conforms and works together.
Are there any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? I'll make one comment. Apparently, an old plumber is watching because I got a text on my phone about my comment about trucks and advertising and separation of plumbers and pipe fitters. We are smarter than we look. Be nice. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. There we go. Is there any other business to come before the committee today? Representative Lagunias, please use your microphone.
We have some motions, too, and I will start with a move to adopt Senate Section 4 on page R22 from lines 71.5 to 75.19. And in this case, there is an amendment, and I would move to adopt the Senate language with Amendment 127. And I believe that is...
Mr. Chair, we really didn't hear it very well.
Yeah.
Can we have that restated, please?
Sure.
Into the microphone, I'm sorry.
The whole motion or just the amendment?
Could you speak in the microphone?
In the microphone.
Please,
so
okay.
We didn't hear it.
Okay. I am moving to adopt the Senate Section 4 on page R22. From line 71.5 to 75.19. And there is an amendment, and I'm moving to adopt that amendment to the Senate language with an amendment coded 127. And I believe that amendment has just been handed out to you, and I would be glad to take questions on the section or the amendment.
Mr. Chair, just wanted to point out. I think the amendment, as stated, got the second line number wrong. Said 75.19. I believe it was intended to be 71.19.
70. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So the line numbers, I believe, Representative Wagenius, were 71.5 to 71.19.
Mm-hmm. So did everyone hear that before I go to you? Did everyone hear the correction to the amendment?
To the motion.
To the motion. Senator Housley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an amendment to the solar farm bee pollinator friendly. And I did talk to all of the stakeholders this afternoon, and they are they're amenable to it. So thank you.
Thank you. So let's see. I'm going to move. I need some help from the staff. Do I move the motion first, or do I move the amendment first?
The amendment.
All right. So I will move the amendment. Is there any comment on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of the amendment as stated, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. We have the amendment adopted. So then the motion, if you'd care to repeat the motion.
I will move to adopt the amended Senate language, and that would be Section 4, R22, on lines 71.5 to 71.19.
Is there any comment on the motion? Any comment on the motion? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Long. I'm going to have to start looking to my right nowadays.
I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank Senator Housley for bringing this language forward. I think it's great to recognize the pollinator habitat that can be living contiguous with solar. So I wanted to thank the Senator.
He hasn't been stung lately. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have adopted that particular motion. There's another motion on the list here.
And that is I move to adopt House Section 62 on page R94, lines 321.6 to 322.2. This is Representative Ruth Richardson's language, and perhaps she would come up to the podium and give us a short, be available for questions if there are any. This is the Utility Diversity Stakeholder Group and a report.
Briefly explain what you do, what your this section does, and we'll open it up for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this section would require utilities to convene a work group to look at increasing inclusion workforce-wise and supplier diversity in terms of thinking of working with small minority women-owned and veteran-owned businesses. From a workforce perspective, it'd be thinking about people of color, indigenous individuals, women, people with disabilities, minorities, and also veterans returning from service as well. And the additional amendment would look at requiring a report in terms of being able to report on the efforts in terms of outreach with those various groups, and also looking at spend as well with those diverse suppliers.
Thank you. Are there any questions to this amendment? Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Senate does not have any objections to this language.
I'm sorry, the Senate hasn't?
Senate does not have any objections to this language.
Are there any questions that I missed?
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I just wanted to ask what conversations you've had with utilities along the way, because I know that this language has changed since it was first introduced in committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Long, I've talked with the utilities, I've talked with Fresh Energy, and I've also been working with the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce as well. And their in terms of the work group, there's a lot of support around that piece, and we've also made changes to the report piece. We've pushed that further out into the future in order to really respond to the requests of the utilities.
Thank you.
At this point, members, to be clear,
could you speak into your mic?
We are there are two pieces of language in the bill, and we are working on the first piece, which is section 62 on line 94. There is another section 44 that I will bring up next.
Okay, so we are moving the section 62
right
on page R94, lines 321.6 to 322.2.
Right.
Any other questions? Comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion as read, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have adopted that. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Richardson also was talking about House Section 44 on page R67. That's line 306.13, and I will move that for the purposes of discussion, and if Representative Richardson would like to add, this is simply a report from utilities that articulates utilities workplace and supplier diversity goals, and then also efforts made. So if Representative Richardson would like to comment on that.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius was correct in terms of the report, and this is really following in the steps of what many other Midwestern states have done, and as a result, they've seen much higher inclusion rates workforce-wise and also looking at supplier diversity as well.
I will open up the discussion to questions if someone has any questions. Representative Osment. Senator, sorry. I'm trying to be nice. I really am.
I'll take you at your word, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the Senate does not agree with this language. This is a bit more expansive. The language we previously passed was reviewed by stakeholders and was found to be acceptable. This, so to speak, ups the ante a bit more than the members of the stakeholder community that had issues with this. So, on the Senate side, we do object to this language.
Any comments? Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Does the Senate have any questions for Representative Richardson? I did move this for the purposes of discussion and not for voting right now because I understood that you had some objection, but I think we have an opportunity to talk to Representative Richardson to see if we can, at some later date, move forward on this.
Any comments? Senator Osment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I almost called her Senator Wagenius. Representative Wagenius, don't. I'm sorry, the language we previously passed was vetted very well, was something that actually Representative Torres Ray brought to me. It was language that I personally went and spoke with stakeholders about. The additional language was not a compromise that we felt was in the best interest of the state of Minnesota, so we do not accept that language, and we appreciate moving forward with the previous language that we actually moved forward out of this committee.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just on the language that Representative Richardson brought forward, this does seem to me to be pretty simple and straightforward. It's asking for reporting on the utility's diversity goals, on the workforce and supplier diversity data, any efforts that they've taken to increase diversity, and any procurement goals they have. So this is essentially just reporting on the work that they're already doing as a way to lift up publicly what we are doing to try to diversify one of the biggest growing areas of our economy. And it feels like this is not particularly burdensome to ask companies to report what they are doing right now. And we know that transparency is a really good way to motivate folks to take more action. So I'm hoping that the Senate might reconsider whether or not this is in the best interest of Minnesota, because I think it would be to help move us forward on diversifying our workforce.
If I might, Representative Richardson, utility diversity policy report. So is this all utilities in the state, or is this the investor-owned, such as Xcel and Minnesota Power and the others? Could you explain who you're asking this, to do this?
The way it's currently written, it would be all.
So it would include the co-ops and the munis?
Mr. Chair, the way it's currently written, it would include those as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
No.
I just have a question on procedure. We have a motion. We have a motion on the floor to pass this language. Then pretty soon we're told that we're not going to pass it. We just want to discuss it. We want to debate it. So why are we taking the time today to debate, discuss, when we are not going to take a vote? We're not going to act on it. Why don't we do this when we're going to get ready to act on it? I guess I'm getting a little confused here as to where we're going with the day. If we're going to have these discussions, then maybe we ought to be voting on them, or else hold the information until we get to that point. So I'm not sure where we're going here. So I just need an explanation as to how this process is working.
Senator, the process is moving forward, trying to bring out some conversations that we're likely to have. I guess the way to say it is that we're trying to make all of us aware of what is an issue in particular here, and get some information out. When Senator Pratt and I had a conversation, we both agreed to we had questions between the two of us about some of the issues that we did move on, and we brought down the commissioners. We're not bringing in, the whole group of testifiers. We've had that particular conversation, Senator Pratt and I. We're going to try and keep this to commissioners, governors, representatives, and if we have a question about a particular piece of the bill, we'll bring the author up to talk a little bit about them. But I don't want to spend a half an hour or 25 minutes on these particular things. I think an author should be able to explain their bill in the 60 to 30-second elevator speech, so that we all understand what's going what the bill does. If you would like to have a further conversation about that, you and I can certainly catch up with each other, and we'll try to make adjustments. As the text said, we all have to play nice, if we can.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you, Senator Pratt. I think what we're trying to do here is to see if we can move to common ground. And to have move to common ground, we have to have discussions. And we've had a discussion about this particular provision. So I will take my motion for discussion off the table and move to the next one. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for helping us out. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have...
I will do another one if you like.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you. And I, for the purposes of discussion, I would like to move House Section 59 on page R92, starting on line 319. And this is a greenhouse gas reduction report. And it is meant to be not a study, but rather a list of things that Commerce already knows that can help us, give us some direction in the future about how we should be proceeding to reduce greenhouse gases. And so with that, I would just open it up for discussion. It's on page 92. It's mislabeled on our sheet.
Well, I will open it up to discussion. Is there any comments or questions? Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, the Senate does not support this language.
Are there any comments or questions? Seeing none.
Then I will withdraw that motion and do one more motion for the purposes of discussion, and that is to adopt a power plant community transition planning section. That is section 52 on page R 81, starting on lines 314.1. And basically, we all are very aware that we are going to be losing some of our major or largest coal plants, and I think there's common ground in wanting to help communities to transition, and because of that, you have to sit down and start making those plans. And basically, what this language does is have three commissioners start to make plans for us, and more importantly, give those recommendations to us.
Are there any questions or comments to the motion? Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, Mr. Chair, this part of this language is part of the clean energy first language that is currently existing in the Finance Committee and the Senate. We are currently continuing to look at that language and actually are, as you'll see within the side-by-side that the Senate is going to be taking this up during interim. This should be an entire package, not piecemeal, and so the Senate does not approve or recommend the passage of that language at this point in time.
Are there any other comments or questions? Representative Wagenius?
Yes, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would hope as we go forward the Senate could reconsider, because we know that these plants are going to be retiring. That is not a guess. We know it. We know these communities are going to have to transition. That's not a guess. We know it. And the best things to do when you know something is going to happen is to plan for it. And so this is the beginning of the planning process. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will...
If I might make a comment?
Yes.
Members, and to the maker of the motion, I'm going to comment on what happens when they close a plant down. When they close a plant down, they make all these promises to the workers that are in the plant. We'll train you. We'll make sure you don't lose any money or lose any income. I've been doing this for a long time. I can think of only once where that happened. The person that is least thought of in this process when they do this is the guy or the woman that goes to work every day, gets their fingernails dirty, comes home, and has to take the shower that most all of us would take at 6 o'clock in the morning. So if you are going to the Senate, to the House, if you are going to put, if this does not pass and you go into the interim to study this, I want to be on that committee, or I want somebody from my committee that will protect the workers and not just the people who make a lot of money. And with that, you've removed your motion. We'll move on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Osmond.
In that same vein, I would make a motion on the following. I would move Senate section on starting on page R7. Senate section, starting in section 2, line 104.10.
If you could wait so we could all get to the right page.
Yes, sir.
What page did you say?
R7.
Page R7.
Okay.
Line 104.10. through page R11, line 107.17.
I could speak to that, Mr. Chair.
Is there any comment?
I'd like to speak to it first, and I'm sure there will be further
comment. Right ahead.
This is exactly in the vein of the commentary that you made, Mr. Chair. It is dealing with the community transition grants. It actually is an expenditure from the renewable development account. This is exactly what you were talking about. And that is the Senate language we have vetted, have had stakeholder discussion with, and this is an expenditure that I think is a very wise move. So I would certainly move that motion, or move that section, and hope that we can move that into our conference committee report.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wiginius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Osmond. We can't. I think this is something that we think about later as we talk about how we spend our RDA money. But we had agreed that we were going to do policy first before we were into spending dollars. And I would also say that it's wise to do planning and make recommendations before you decide you're going to spend money. So it does seem to me these are a pair, and we should not be doing one without the other. So at this time, the House is opposed to that language.
Senator Housen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This directly affects my community of Oak Park Heights, and they are planning. They do know that the King plant in Bayport is going to be closing, and these grants will help them a ton to plan for those workers and how they're going to close down the King plant. So I know we're not talking about money right now, but it is in the same vein. So I do support adopting the Senate language as an amendment.
Any comments other than Senator Pratt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, first of all, I'm a co-author on the Clean Energy First bill, and it would be my preference, going back to the previous motion, to leave that intact with Clean Energy First. But I think Senator Osmick's motion is spot on to the concerns that you raised, and not just talking about planning, but actually doing something to protect the very workers that you discussed in your comments, Mr. Chair. And this generation is predominantly in the in the Excel RDA area. I think it's perfectly reasonable to be able to use RDA money and actually put some research, planning, studies. All these things don't come for free. They don't come for free. Even in the Clean Energy First proposal, why it's sitting in finance is because these policies don't always come for free. And I think this is a very action-oriented response to the very concerns that you raised. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'll close my comments. But I'm very supportive of the Senate language.
And my final comments will be, we have an awful lot of people who represent business interests and white-collar jobs and callousless hands with no calluses. We have a couple of representatives of the workers. So I will tell you that I would oppose this until some more representation of the people from the plant itself, not the foreman, not the superintendent, but the man or the woman who is down on that plant floor pulling on a wrench or kicking a generator to get the dang thing going. So for that particular reason, I guess I'm getting on my high horse, but we need more representation from the people on the plant floor so that they do not end up on the short end of the stick. Yes, Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would point out Representative Mahoney on line 106.15, this whole section would include two representatives that are workers at an investor-owned power plant. So what we're doing here, and this is really Senator Housley's bill, we would be doing that. They would be at the table on the advisory council. So I think that really, I mean, unless you want to make more representation for workers, I'd certainly be willing to consider that. But I think we have tried to bring in not just the white collar, but the blue collar here. Mr. Chair, to be respectful to our friends on the other side, I will withdraw the motion for future consideration.
Thank you. Is there any comments or concerns or question we'd like to bring up before we adjourn?
Mr. Chair,
speak into the microphone, please.
We have some large provisions in our bills that are different, and I think it would be a good time now to talk about community solar positions. And with that, I would like to yield to Representative Long.
Representative Long?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And members, I do not think you need to yield. Just put your arms up.
However, I'm recognized. I'm grateful. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a community solar program in the state of Minnesota that's been around since 2013. It's been the most successful community solar program in the country. We've had 513 megawatts of community solar developed. We have over 12,000 Minnesotans who have participated, a number of public entities, schools, local governments that are participating. And we know with any big program there are challenges. There are things that we need to work out. Both of us have proposed different ways to move forward. The Public Utilities Commission has spent years debating this program and a lot of energy and time trying to work things out. We've also seen one of the challenges that I think both the House and Senate have recognized is that the current structure hasn't allowed as many residential participants as we'd like. And so one of the programs I'd like to bring up today is the Community Access Project proposal, which we included in our bill. And I'll draw members' attentions to pages R20 and R21 for the Community Access Project. And for the sake of discussion, I'd like to move Section 6, Subdivisions 6, 7, and 8, starting on page R20 for the Community Access Projects. So there was a lot of bipartisan agreement in our committee about this proposal, and wanted to bring it to the attention of the senators and give you a little bit of information about it if that would be useful. The goal here with the community access projects is to try to recognize some of the unique challenges that folks working in low-income communities have to being able to finance these projects and put them together. It's a challenge to work with a large amount of residential subscribers and also challenged to work in low-income communities. And but there are some projects that have been done in this space that have been done very successfully and that are reducing energy costs to a number of low-income Minnesotans. And so the Community Access Project would recognize that there are unique challenges to these projects, but that we want to reward them and try to encourage them. And so it would specify that for projects where they are focused on residential and focused on low income, that they would be applicable, able to participate at the retail rate, which was where community solar gardens started before the value of solar rate was adopted. So there was, I think, broad bipartisan agreement on this provision in the House, and I wanted to bring it to the attention of the senators for their consideration.
Any comments from the Senate from my right?
Always to your right, perfect chair. I guess I'll ask one question for Representative Long first. Does this not include a RDA expenditure in order to work? Is that not true?
Representative Long.
No, it does not that I recall.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is it does have a $1 million RDA expenditure in the first year and a $1 million RDA expenditure in the second year. And the rules that we have been underneath is that anything that touches finances whether it be RDA or not, is not for discussion at this point in time.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that is referring to a separate program. That's the low income program, which is starting on Section 7, page R23. But for the community access projects that I'm referring to now, there is not an RDA appropriation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmond.
Well, Representative Long, while I appreciate your discussing sections of your community solar garden program, this needs to be a holistic approach, and doing a shotgun or piecemeal is not something I think is in the best interest of the conference committee. I would certainly not support filling out individual items, RDA expenditures or not, unless we are having a global discussion about the whole bill, whole section that we need to deal with. So while I appreciate you wanting to talk about it, I think we need to talk about the whole community solar garden program, and I think we all understand bipartisanly that it needs to be fixed. I actually had a conversation earlier today and put some offers on the table, which we're not talking about today, but I'm hoping we can. But short answer is piecemealing this is not something I think is in the best interest of the state or the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, and I think that the other provisions that were in the bill are fairly self-explanatory, and I think we can go into negotiation with, moving 1 megawatt to 3 megawatt doesn't take a lot of explanation, but this program in particular I think was unique, and so I wanted to raise it today to make sure folks had a full understanding of it. We also have some folks who, in the audience who have worked on this, if there are specific questions that folks have on this program.
Is there any questions, discussions, comments? Seeing none. You've got to raise your hand here.
Mr. Chair, right, thank you. I'll seeing no additional questions on the program, I assume it's fully understood, and hopefully we'll be able to discuss it further. So I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Is there any other comments before the committee today? Is there any other questions or comments, motions? I have one, and that's for the my co-chair. Are we meeting tomorrow? Any idea of the time so that we can fool the people that we fooled yesterday? We declared it for 12:30, and we had to prolong it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We would like to meet tomorrow and bring in Senator Rarick. Has been working on some retainage language that I think we can discuss and potentially adopt. The time, I think we're tentatively looking at 4:30, understanding that we'll be in joint session tomorrow talking about the regents. So I would say that's a tentative 4:30, but also to the call of the chair.
Senator Pratt, does Senator Rarick have his final language? And if so, is it online or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last time I talked to Senator Rarick, the final pieces were still being drafted, and I would expect that we should be able to get those out tonight.
Good. Because I'm the co-author of that one, and I'm not sure where he took it in the last couple
Mr.
of weeks.
Senator Rarick was talking with school districts and municipalities trying to allay some of their final concerns in the bill.
Sounds good. Seeing no further comments, we stand in recess, adjournment till tomorrow afternoon, approximately 4:30, but it is the call of the chair, so keep your eye on the email.